The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello everyone, hope you're all well. Welcome along to Sunday's Racing Podcast here with William Hill Radio. It's myself, Dave Kellner, with James Millman to take a look ahead to Sunday's action at Carlisle after the, I think, racing's longest Saturday. So we're looking ahead to Carlisle. We've also got meetings at Huntingdon, at Leopardstown and at Cork on Sunday afternoon. It should be a terrific day. Thanks for being here with William Hill. First of all, good afternoon to my pundit, Mr. Millman. How are you doing, James?
Yep, pretty good. Thank you, Dave. Like I say, cracking American action Saturday night, but not a bad card at Carlisle on Sunday.
Yeah, before we get stuck into that card at Carlisle, obviously we record Sunday's Racing Podcast before Saturday's action, so I'm sure a lot of you listening to this now will know what's happened on Saturday night. But I took in a little bit of the Breeders' Cup on Friday evening, and it was a good evening for the Europeans.
Definitely, it was absolutely cracking evening for the Europeans. And Joe Hughes got off to a flying start with London Bridge in the marathon, which opened the Breeders' Cup races on Friday evening, and well placed. I think picked up $160,000 London Bridge for a horse that I think started his career off mark of 60 back in the spring. Won a couple of handicaps. He was placed at Ascot in a big $50,000 mile and a half handicap, and fourth in Deauville, I think, last time out, but didn't really strike you as a Breeders' Cup horse. But with a mile six, an extreme distance in America, the jockeys went off far too fast in the first four furlongs, and given a great ride by Mike Smith, rode him.
Yeah.
Just sat mid-div, even around the home bend. He didn't look like he was going to get involved, but as a stamina petered out of all the American horses that had gone too quick, he sailed down the outside, and it was an impressive performance, but it wasn't the greatest of Breeders' Cup races, but a great bit of placing by Joe Hughes. And like I say, a few people said, oh, why hasn't other horses running in the race? But I think last year, Fame and Glory and Dermot Well took one over, and they both pulled up because the dirt surface is so alien to what the European horses normally race on. And we don't normally have a very good record in it, but London Bridge was a cracking result for a small stable and well-executed plan.
One race that I did manage to catch, and I was listening to William Hill Radio, obviously, throughout the evening, but one race I did watch was the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf last night, Outstrip winning for Charlie Appleby. And yet again, I think it was a race where tactics were or played an important part in the race, and Bobby Kitten was sent off like a scalded cat.
Yeah, there was a few angry people on the old Twitter with Bobby's Kitten. I said, I don't watch too much American racing, but he went crazy fractions out in front on a horse that was a very, very short price favourite, Bobby's Kittens, and he went off far too fast. And I think Ryan, in second, he was kind of forced to play his hand a little bit too early on the Ballydoyle horse. And
yeah, Giovanni Baldi, yeah, I'd bat that horse.
He kicked off, I think if Ryan could ride a race again, he'd wait 10, 20 strides, because obviously the favourite had gone off in front, and he thought, oh, in case he is that good, I can't let him get four lengths off me off the bend. And Ryan kicked on plenty soon enough and just got the better of Bobby's Kittens. It was vulnerable when Outstrip come flying down the outside. And Mike Smith, he found the gaps at the right time.
Yeah.
Sandra Nita Turf Shack is particularly tight, and you need a lot of luck in running on that inner track. And luckily he got the gaps and he picked up nicely. But Outstrip himself, he's not the biggest type in the world. I don't know whether he's going to train on for next year, but I have to say, a great result for Charlie Appleby in his first season since taking over from Mohamed Al-Zarouni, and he's doing an absolutely cracking job.
That was an impressive performance from Outstrip, reeling in Giovanni Baldini with Bobby's Kitten back in third. Another couple of races were worth dissecting last night, and one race that had implications as far as the 1,000 guineas market was concerned. Chrysalium, trained by Charlie Hills, winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf at Santa Anita on Friday night, and obliterated the field.
Yeah, obliterated is the word to use. She was extremely impressive, and all season Charlie Hills has said this filly is a very, very smart horse, but she's not really repeated it on the track. She'd been very inconsistent. She'd put up the odd good effort and then disappoint as Willie Carson said, disappoint for no reason at all when he was interviewed after the race. And she was a 21 winner at the Fillies Mile at Newmarket about 3 weeks ago, and people weren't too sure what to make of the form. But like I say, she backed up two efforts in a row, and she was very, very impressive. She quickened 5 lengths clear of a smart enough field. First winner for Richard Hughes at the Breeders' Cup meeting, ridden with a lot of patience. I don't think it was the strongest race. The 3 Euro horses were obviously a class above the American representatives, but you couldn't be fail to be impressed by Cresselium. She knows she stays a mile. I think she's got a favourite's chance at the moment for next year's 1,000 guineas. Vorda is a sprinter, pure and simple. She was drawn 6, yet somehow she ended up 5 wide round the first bend. She was chased up down the back, and then she didn't get home. She doesn't stay a mile, but she had a bad trip round, and I'd forgive her that. But again, she's on the small side, and whether she's going to train on from 2 to 3 to excel in these top races, I'm not so sure. She's done extremely well this season, but like I say, I think she might struggle next year.
Cresselium 7-1, by the way, for the Kipco 1,000 guineas here with Hills, which isn't a bad
it's
price.
It's not a bad price because she was impressive. It's a long time.
Yeah.
Like for me, I always tend to like to wait and see what happens in the 3-year-old trials and try to get a bit of an angle. But I remember Sky Lantern, she had a busy 2-year-old campaign, a little bit like Cresselium. She actually got beat in that race last year. I think, as people remember, Richard Hughes had no luck in running on her that day, and she was about 7th or 8th, but she came back and she was ready to go at the start of the season. So 7-1 is not a bad price, because I was definitely impressed with her performance yesterday.
What did you make to the distaff on Friday night? Because that was another really impressive performance, this time from Beholder. I don't know if it was the strongest distaff.
Yeah, confined to fillies, it's a bit like the few. The question we got about her is, against the filly, she dominates. How she's going to get on against the colts tonight? But Beholder did it in good fashion. She was kind of expected to, I think.
Yeah.
She just did what she had to do. But like I say, in America, Justin have more races for the fillies only, and like I say she was very, very impressive. But whether she can do it against colts in the future, that is always the big question mark.
Is there a certain type of horse you look for at Santa Anita, or the American tracks in particular, when you're studying the form for the Breeders' Cup? Is there a certain type of European-style runner that you think goes well there?
The trouble is, not many European horses actually run on a track as tight as Santa Anita, especially in the turf, because basically it's like running around Wolverhampton.
Yeah.
And
or Chester, maybe.
Yeah, and our best horses tend to run your Newmarket's Ascot, the straight 7 furlong, straight miles. And it is a totally kind of alien experience for quite a few of these. And never mind going on the dirt. Like I say, Declaration of War, he goes on the dirt today in the Classic, and they've taken him to Seville for a gallop, but Seville's nothing like actually a proper race around the dirt on the Breeders' Cup. And it is very, very hard for European horses to transfer their classy form back onto the dirt. And if Declaration of War can do it, he's a very, very good horse, because, like I say, a lot of European horses try and they fail quite miserably.
If you're listening to this on Sunday morning, you'll know exactly what's happened in the Breeders' Cup on Saturday night. If you're listening to it before Saturday evening's action, have you got one tip for us? You might be made to look foolish here, because some people might be listening to this on Sunday morning and they'll think, what the heck was it that guy talking about?
Yeah, I think the few, again, what I said, she doesn't do it against the colts, but John Gosden, I do respect him a lot, and the fact he's swerved a 2 million race with the fillies only, and he's gone against the boys with her again. She must be in pretty good form. I think she can do it, as long as she gets luck in running, which unfortunately last year she didn't. She got stuck on that inside rail, but drawn 7 this time, hopefully Woody Buick can negotiate a safer passage. And I know she is 2-1. Little Mike, he's going to go out in front. Maybe he can hold on this time, I'm not so sure. I think the few got a good chance.
Before we get stuck into Carlisle's racing and making the listeners wait for this, the Melbourne Cup is a race that stops the nation on Tuesday morning. The draw was made this morning. There is a piece on the website now with Matt Hill, the Aussie commentator, who goes through the majority of the runners at the head of the market. Doesn't only give you a win selection, gives you a few exotics as well. Is the Melbourne Cup a race that captures your imagination, James?
It's definitely a race that captures the imagination, but again, like last year, you need a lot of luck for everything to go right. And Matt Office, he was unlucky last year, yeah. But he's been drawn 22. I saw Luca Camani send a tweet, basically 22. not
dead.
Not happy bunnies, because he's going to be stuck very, very wide. Last year, there was no real pace on for a championship race, and he just had no luck in running it, and it could be a similar scenario again from Stall 22. I look at Kamani, he's had so many close seconds now, he's kind of tearing his hair out and trying to win this race, and like the guards haven't been with him.
Now, Matt Hill was saying that he uses the Caulfield Cup as his main guide to runners that are racing in the Melbourne Cup, and Dan Dino ran a cracker in the Caulfield Cup. So consistent, Marco Botti's horse, Dan Dino.
He's been consistent in a lot of top grade races for the past few years for various different trainers, and like I say, he's got big race wins behind him. I'd give him every chance. It's just, like I say, it is a very, very tricky event, and the Australian horses have a totally different preparation to us. Like I say, they run over a lot shorter trips before they run in the Melbourne Cup, and it's, you do sometimes get a bit of a freak result in the race. But like I say, I'll give Dan Dino probably the best chance of the European challenges. Red Caddo, they're pretty confident he can run another big race, but he has been a little bit disappointing in the summer. He ran a cracking race when second in the Dubai World Cup, but whether he's in quite the peak form what he was a couple of years ago, I'm not too sure, but he's always thereabouts. But it's a great race and prospect.
Okay, let's get stuck into the card at Carlisle as well. Supporting action from Huntingdon, Leopardstown and Cork on Sunday afternoon. James, your first selection at Carlisle comes in the Novices Hurdle over 2 miles and 3 furlongs. This is the 205.
Yeah, I've gone for Deputy Dan in this race, representing Oliver Sherwood and Leighton Aspel. Deputy Dan was extremely impressive in bumpers last year, winning at Toxter in Exeter. He represents the same connections as Puffin Billy. I think he could be a very, very nice sort to go hurdling. I think he might get a little bit of value because Oscar Fortune won a nice race 19 days ago, representing John Joe O'Neill and Tony McCoy. Obviously, McCoy is chasing that 4,000 at the moment. Oscar Fortune, he was quite impressive at Huntingdon, but he's got a £7 penalty. And I think this Deputy Dan is a pretty nice horse. The Sherwood horse is normally pretty straight first time out, and I think he could be another potential Puffin Billy.
Okay, Deputy Dan in the 205. The 240 is the Colin Parker Memorial Intermediate Chase, a listed race over 2.5 miles. Just the five runners here, James.
Only five runners. Normally that's what we get in these intermediate chases, but there's some interesting chasers taking their chances. Hazy Tom, he's the only one to have had a recent run. He was a winner at Bangor 31 days ago. He loves small fields, and the fact that his four rivals haven't had a run yet this season, Chai Longs and Giard remains in absolutely cracking form at the moment. And although he probably isn't the best horse in this race, I think he's going to be the one that's most finely tuned for this run. And I think he's got an outstanding chance of backing up that Bangor success. Obviously, Tap Knight, Remsen and Lucinda Russell, and JP McManus, AP McCoy is on board. He's got every chance of going close, but I just think Hazy Tom, a small field, he may just stole a bit of a march on his rivals fitness wise, and the fact he loves small fields, so I'd give Hazy Tom a great chance in that 240.
And finally, the 345 at Carlisle. This is a class 3 handicap chase over 3 miles and 2 furlongs.
Yeah, Global Power again. I'm going to go for Leighton Aspel and Oliver Sherwood, a pretty useful hurdler. He was quite lightly raced over fences, but was put into some strong handicaps at the back end of last year. Didn't run too badly when his stamina gave way when fourth in the Midlands National, and then ran a cracking race from second over 3.5 at Exeter. I think the trip just stretched him. Dropping back to 3.2 furlongs, I think, will be ideal. He's lightly raced. I'd say the Sherwood team normally get him pretty straight first time out, and the fact they've taken him up to Carlisle for his first run, I think he'll go pretty close. But it should be a competitive handicap. No Planning wasn't beaten too far last time out for Sue Smith, and Libby Barham was only beaten those at the same track, Carlisle, last time as well. So those two are probably dangerous, haven't had runs recently. But I just think Global Power could prove well handicapped, dropping slightly back in trip.
Good stuff, James. Thank you. We do have a preview with Matt Hill on the Melbourne Cup, which I will attach to this podcast. And it will be available on its own as well. Go to williamhill.com/podcast to check out all the on-demand audio, and at the end of this podcast as well, we will hear from Matt Hill. But before we hear from Matt Hill, let's get the thoughts of Declan O'Donoghue on the Irish action on Sunday afternoon. So Declan's coming next, and then we'll attach Matt Hill's Melbourne Cup preview onto the end of this podcast as well. Thanks to James Millman again for contributing to Sunday's Racing Podcast, and thanks to you for listening.
Placing a bet on the William Hill app is simple. If the race is coming up, look at the next races section and scroll across to find the right one. Or go to meetings, swipe down to find the right course, then across to find the race. When you see your horse, tap the price to put it in your bet slip and you'll see it in the top right corner. You can also now listen to us on the app too. Just select the sport menu on the top left and tap radio.
Hi, it's Declan O'Donoghue of the Irish Sun here for William Hill Radio. Looking at today's racing at Leopardstown and at Cork. Well, we start off in Cork, an interesting one in the second race, a very good race, this, the 140, and the one I like here is number 6, Something Wonderful, from the very much informed Desi Hughes stable. Desi thinks quite a bit of this one. He's making a huge step up in trip here from 2 miles to 3, but that could be the key. He's a good price as well. He stays forever. Very safe, very good horse, this one. Still, I think, a little bit underrated for what he will achieve, and I think a nice price today won't to be on. Number 6, Something Wonderful, in the 140 at Cork. Well, the big race in Cork, of course, is the Cork National at 3.25. And a couple of ones I like there. The Moon and Sixpence should go particularly well for Paul Tennant, as long as he handles the ground. But the one we're going for is number 7, Fisher Bridge. Barry Geraghty in the plate here for Noel Mead. This one, a decent start of a horse. I don't think this is the best Cork National ever, and that's putting it mildly. And I think he's just a bit of touch of class here that the others don't have. Well, it's the closing day of the flat season at Leopardstown. And in the 2.35, we go here with Jim Bulger, number 3, Mandatario. Now, this one won a race at Gorn from a very bad draw, which is not an easy thing to do. And it was a race that Trading Netter actually won last year. Next up at Dundalk, he met Giovanni Baldini. Well, he was up against it there. We ran a very credible race in second. And he looks a class act here. Mekong River has won 3 on the country circuit, but this is a different level here today. And I'm very confident about number 3, Mandatario, in the 2.35. Now in the 3.40, a nice one here for you, number 5, Al Murak, the Andy Oliver stable, improving all the time, Gary Carr on board. This is third time looking for him. Nice horse, number 5, Al Murak, in the 3.40. Well, the 4.10, it's the last flat race of the season and the last race of the day, and we're going here number 14, Bayan, from Gordon Elliott. And Sylvester D'Souza in the plate here. This one, a very good versatile horse. Last on at Cheltenham, actually, last month, and ran a very good race, just beating a neck there, but it's very useful on the flat as well. Ran particularly well at Galway, where I thought it was very unlucky, over a mile and a half. Everything in his favour today, very, very strongly fancied, I can tell you, in what is always, of course, a tricky race. That's number 14, Bayan, in the 4.10. So our selections then, at Leopardstown, 2.35, number 3, Mandatario, 3.40, number 5, Al Murak, and the 4.10, number 14, Bayan. And at Cork, in the 1.40, number 6, Something Wonderful, and in the Cork National, 3.25, number 7, Fisher Bridge. This is Declan O'Donoghue of the Irish Sun for William Hill Radio.
The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off racing.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello everyone, welcome along. You're listening to the latest edition of the Racing Podcast, and we're going to look ahead to the Melbourne Cup, the race that stops a nation on Tuesday morning. I'm Dave Kellner, and I'm in the company of Australian commentator Matt Hill to look ahead to this classic race. Matt, good morning.
Hello, Dave. Yes, good to talk to you again. Although, as we do this every year, and it's getting to the stage where you guys can tell me more about the Melbourne Cup than I can, because you've absolutely packed the field this year with horses from Great Britain, Germany, Ireland, France, but it's an intriguing race.
It is, Matt, and as you say, a lot of the horses towards the head of the betting, we know, former European raiders, and it's... I read a quote from a journalist named Nick Compton that says, basically, it should be a national holiday for the whole of Australia, a public holiday, because no one gets anything done. The hardcore punters are studying the form for last-minute tips. The casual punters are trying to talk up the chances of this horse or that one. And the once-a-year gamblers are picking the horse with the best name. It really does capture the imagination of the general public, this race.
It is so true. About, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago, you just started, I live in Sydney, and you just start to see All of the signs going up, all of the hotels around Sydney that are having big lunches for the Melbourne Cup. And you're quite right. I think people work in the early part of the day, finish about midday, and then they go and celebrate the Melbourne Cup. So you're quite right. It probably should be a national holiday. But then you've got a few people out there that can't understand even why Melbourne has a public holiday for a horse race. They think it's ridiculous. But there is nothing else quite like it. And it is so cliched, the race that stops the nation. But it literally does. It doesn't matter if you're whatever job you have, everybody stops when that race jumps, and they've always got an opinion. And that's the thing about the Melbourne Cup. If it was a normal 24-horse race that goes round week in, week out, you'd probably narrow it down to four or five chances. But because so many people are having a stab at it, they've all got an opinion, so it makes it quite confusing.
I've never had the pleasure of going to the Melbourne Cup, but from what I've read and what I've heard, it's unlike any other horse race. We've got nothing like it back here in the UK. The Grand National obviously does capture the public's imagination, but it isn't that same, or it doesn't feel like that same sort of carnival-like atmosphere that you get down under.
Well, I've got to say, as a racing purist, the Melbourne Cup, the whole carnival, we've just experienced Victoria Derby Day last Saturday, and many Australians would say that that's one of the great race meetings of the world because we have the top-class horses going around. But then Melbourne Cup Day is the iconic day, and there are so many marquees, and there are actually people that there's a massive car park at Flemington, the famous car park, and it's almost bigger than the racetrack itself. And some punters will actually get there with a picnic, maybe out of the back of their car, and they'll never see a horse. They will actually not see a horse or have a bet. They will just have the champagne and have the food. And then there's the celebrity factor as well, where a lot of celebrities go into marquees that are absolutely lavish, and they won't see a race either. So it is a real carnival atmosphere. They'll get about 110,000 to the Melbourne Cup on Tuesday, and for any race, that is quite phenomenal. And then the Thursday, Oaks Day, which they call Ladies' Day, the three-year-old fillies battle it out in the Oaks, and all the ladies get to Flemington, and they'll get 80,000 people to that, and that's not even a public holiday.
Does sound like a cracking atmosphere. As for this year's renewal, let's get stuck into the race. Fiorenti, formerly trained by Sir Michael Stout, a horse that we know a lot about over here, now with Guy Waterhouse. Is this horse a worthy favourite?
I think so, especially after its run in the Cox Plate. The interesting factor about this year's race is the form angles are a little bit all over the place. I've always been a real stickler for the Caulfield Cup being the form race, but it appears that that's not going to be the case this year. Fiorente ran a very brave race in the Cox Plate over 10 furlongs around the tighter track of Moonee Valley. The young jockey Blake Shin decided to lead from the front and really work with Fiorente, and it was able to stick on. So it's going to be a horse that will be up in the firing line. The one horse that interests me is Sea Moon, a horse that came over here with big wraps from Britain. It's had a couple of runs here, and I'd like to think that the Melbourne Cup winner has raced here before. There's a few horses in the race that we haven't seen, but I really do think you have to race here first. And Sea Moon has just been ticking along nicely, just making steady progress, and has got a victory and a comprehensive one over Fiorente to its name last year. So it's the one that I think is I wouldn't say a smoky. It's about $15 here in Australia. It's about the sixth pick in the market. But look, I think Fiorente certainly deserves to be up there. But I think, having said that, Sea Moon should be considered.
Sea Moon drawn in box number 7. So Fiorente at the head of the betting, Sea Moon at a bigger price. Let's talk through a couple of the others. We'll start off with Mount Athos, who I believe is drawn in 22, Mount Athos. Is this Luca Camani's best chance to win the race with Mount Athos? He's tried to win it on 8 occasions, Luca Camani. Mount Athos, second in the market.
Yeah, and I mean, they ran a fantastic race last year. Has the services of Craig Williams, so he loses nothing there. It's an international with a lovely weight, 54 kilos. I think it fits in beautifully there. The only problem is that barrier. I think the barrier draw has taken place not long ago, and I think that has just about gutted them, barrier number 22. That's a very hard gate to win the Melbourne Cup from. It will have to cover extra ground from there. They have a straight run of about 800 metres or half a mile, but they really have to tuck in and get a spot. And I think with a horse like Brown Panther in the race, I believe Brown Panther will probably truck them along and string them out. Mount Athos might be able to get a run, but it's going to be a long, long way back from them. And if it has the tactical pace to jump onto the back of something, approaching the home turn, it's a chance, but it's going to have to be a very, very good ride. It's going to have to be a 10 out of 10 ride by Craig Williams, but deserves to be up there.
You mentioned Brown Panther momentarily there. A lot of people over here will be backing Brown Panther because of connections more than anything else, owned by Michael Owen, this horse.
Don't worry. Yeah, I was at supper the other night, and a few people were mentioning it, and they were doing exactly the same thing. He is familiar to Australian sports fans. Australians are sports nuts, so they certainly know who Owens is. But I'm told by a Welsh colleague of mine, Dave, that he's known to be a bit of a traitor, isn't he, in Wales?
Would that be Darren Owen that's told you that, by any chance?
Yeah, he's very fired up about that. my football knowledge isn't great, but I believe that he should be playing for Wales.
I think he was born on the border, Matt. So he chose the nation that he was more likely to go to a World Cup with, Matt. I think that was
well,
the thing.
I can understand that. I can understand that. But he's one of the horses that landed at Tullamarine Airport 2 weeks ago. A truckload of them, or a plane load of them, that hasn't seen a racetrack here in Australia. They've gone to the quarantine at Werribee. And that's all we know about Brown Panther. But it's drawn a beautiful barrier, barrier number 6, but then it's no good having a good gate if you don't have the tactical speed. Of what I've seen of Simeon, who's raced here, the Willie Mullins galloper, I don't think it has the speed at all. I believe that they have tried to put a bit of zip into Simeon, try and sharpening it up at Werribee, at the quarantine centre, but it's a horse that will probably get out the back, and it's no good having a good barrier if you're going to do that.
Yeah. Do you think having previous experience in Australia racing on those sort of race courses is a big positive?
I do. I think if an international is going to win the Melbourne Cup, and we've just seen it with many of the Godolphin horses, and that's why I think that if you're looking for a very good bolter, a horse like Royal Empire would have to be considered. I think a mile and a half horse is what you need. It's a very quick 2 miles, the Melbourne Cup. It's not a dour staying race that the British and the Irish should get themselves into. Such a race like the Goodwood Cup, for instance, or the Ascot Gold Cup is a completely different race to the Melbourne Cup. The Melbourne Cup's probably a bit like the Ebor, big field over a distance. But you need to have a bit of zip to win it. And I think a horse like Royal Empire, who the only thing is hasn't seen racing here before, and that's important. We saw horses like Oscar Schindler and Drum Taps come here years ago, and they just couldn't handle the closeness of the Australian racing. Australian jockeys ride very tight, and they tend to brush into each other, and it's a tough, fast 2 miles, the Melbourne Cup. You have to be a serious racehorse to win it, and a lot of these horses have just been loping along in long distance races in Britain, where they're able to settle with plenty of room and stay away from each other. But the Melbourne Cup's a completely different contest.
We've been through the top couple in the market, Matt. Only another couple of horses in at single figure prices here at Hills, and one of them, you made reference to the Caulfield Cup being a particular form line that you don't take a cursory glance at. You studied that form line closely, and Dandino was second in the Caulfield Cup, trained by Marco Botti, this horse, a horse that we obviously know very well and a very consistent runner.
I've got to tell you, Dave, if it was 15 years ago and Dandino was an Australian horse and we saw that run in the Caulfield Cup, it would be favourite for sure. That run in the Caulfield Cup was an absolute bottler. It stormed home. Is it a two-miler? That's the question mark, I suppose. But as far as a Caulfield Cup trial into the Melbourne Cup, what a run it was. It was just attacking the line at the end of a mile and a half. So, look, Dan Dino is certainly in calculations, but the one horse that I think you have to respect is one of the Australians, a horse called Hawk Spur.
Yep.
He was trained by our leading trainer here in Sydney, Chris Waller. This horse won a race over a mile about 6 or 7 weeks ago called the Chelmsford, and they were already hailing it the Melbourne Cup favourite then. And, look, it's a very good horse and had a torrid run in the Caulfield Cup and was very, very good hitting the line. It was just a beautiful trial for the Melbourne Cup. And from a local point of view, Hawk Spur with Jim Cassidy, who's a legend over here, he's looking for his 100th Group 1, so there's a bit of a fairy tale attached to it. He has to go in.
Matt, we've been through the top four or five in the betting. Give me your overall verdict on the race, Matt.
Well, it's a mighty question. I'm going to stick with Sea Moon because it's a horse that I've followed since it started racing here, and the owner Lloyd Williams knows how to win a Melbourne Cup. He's won four of them, so I think for me, the top two that I'll be certainly sticking to, Sea Moon, and the other horse that I really do like is Hawk Spur. I don't think the barrier 18 is going to be a problem for Hawk Spur because it gets back anyway, and Cassidy knows how to win a Melbourne Cup. His first Melbourne Cup winner was back in 1983. It was 30 years ago, and he knows Flemington and fits in beautifully with 53.5 kilos. So number four, Sea Moon, and number 18, Hawk Spur. And then if I'm having exotic forms of betting, a horse over here that has been performing well in Australia, and it might be a surprise to some Brits, is Mass Marvel. It's seemingly grown a leg over here, and it's going very well. And I'd be throwing it in with the other bolter I mentioned earlier, Royal Empire.
Matt, absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning on the Racing Podcast. Enjoy the Melbourne Cup afternoon. I know it's a special day down there, and I look forward to catching up with you soon.
No, it'd be tremendous, and lovely that the Melbourne Cup gets the attention around the world that it does, and it's great that William Hill has taken plenty of interest in it. And, as I say, give it 5 years and you'll be telling me more about it, I think.
I'm not sure that will ever be the case, Matt, but thanks.
Good on you, Dave. Thank you.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.